to another episode of The Geek Whispers. You're back with your favorite hosts, Matt.
And I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And we are pleased to dive into yet another angle on the many tech careers that you can have and that we have seen in our industry. So we are pleased to be joined by Nikki Acosta. Nikki, could you introduce yourself for people?
Hey, I am Nikki Acosta. I am a cloud evangelist at Cisco.
Yes, and boy, do you have a few evangelists, badges on your sash there, if we were going Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts style. But you, when I think of Nikki, I always think of someone that's just an evangelist. You were an evangelist before it was cool. You are over at Cisco now. I'm really interested that, like, just to get right into it, how did you break into the cloud space? It wasn't always the easiest conversation. And so when did you get your breakout moment in cloud?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, my journey or my path to cloud was kind of by accident. I wasn't really, one of those people who really got some kind of computer science degree and, was hacking on computers when I was 13 or whatever. But I worked for a home builder for many, many, many years, and all through my 20s was working weekends. And they came to me. We adopted SAP, which is an absolute nightmare because it works great while you're like maybe building a cell phone, but it doesn't work great when you're building a house and people change their mind on paint colors. And, if you screwed up, there'd be like this big giant triangle that said conflict with a K. So I kind of became like the unofficial help desk for, the 50 plus year old sales reps that I worked with in the home building industry. And I was approached by a national sales coordinator or marketing coordinator who said, "Hey, Nikki, you're really good at computer stuff. Do you know about the internet?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course." And they're like, "How would you like to build our internet home sales program?" And I was like, "What does that involve?" And they're like, "Well, you'd work with a team of developers and, you'd create this, tool or, back-end web portal thing, and you could send like people pictures of houses and you could chat with them on the internet." And I was like, "Man, that sounds cool. I'm tired of working weekends." And so I started doing that, and it was like, "Whoa, I love this way better than working weekends." And the housing market was starting to tank. That was like 2008, the supply of California buyers who were selling their homes for a ridiculous amount of money in California and coming to Austin and slapping down a big pile of cash, even though they didn't have jobs in Austin, that started to dry up a little bit. And so transitioned my sales career from selling what I would call, physical real estate with a home builder over to digital real estate with Rackspace.
Oh, and I love it, Nikki.
It's
great because it's such a... So, Nikki, that's just incredibly interesting, right? Because you came at it from an angle, it's just the opportunity presented itself and you were the best person for the job. But so 2008 was kind of the anchor point, which I don't think evangelist was a real popular title just yet, or it definitely hadn't taken off like it has. And
Matt, cloud wasn't a popular title in 2008.
No.
Yeah. So remind us of years past. So you're offered up this role at Rackspace, and did you even know what you were signing up for, or was it just this thing that sounded fun?
I had no clue. I was like, "Oh, cool. This company has a great corporate culture. It seems really fun. It's sales. I can do sales." I had no idea what I was signing up for. And during that time, there was really no cloud. I mean, my first, I would say year in tech, there was this, I think it was my orientation, they had this crazy thing that said code it, load it, watch it scale, MOSO. And I was like, what? I don't even understand what that means. Like, and it was sort of Rackspace's kind of foray into cloud. Jonathan Bryce at the time had created this platform that would auto scale that you could put your WordPress site on. And I was like, "All right, cool. I kind of get that." And then the Rackspace cloud was born after we acquired Slicehost. And I was like, "Oh, wow. So wait, we're like over here, actually physically racking and stacking servers in a data center, and it's taking, you know, if we're lucky, a week to get it online, you know, if we're not lucky, a couple weeks to get it online, but you could like type in this code and it would just appear. Like, that's the future. That's cool. And so, I was still on a sales team. We had this weird concept of a team quota. And so everyone on the team kind of had their specialty, and no one really wanted to deal with cloud. You couldn't meet your quota selling cloud. But man, I was so excited by just, you know, how fast you could do things and how, you know, everything was programmatically controlled. And I was like, man, this is the future. This is what I want to be involved in. And so I was really lucky to have, you know, great mentors along the way at Rackspace, and people who taught me things, and people who were willing to speak to me in a language that I could understand as far as technology was concerned. And that's how I broke into the cloud. And soon after that, started working with public cloud, and then OpenStack.
Sure. And Nikki, and before we get into OpenStack too much, I think there's a lot to unpack right there. Amy,
I've got a question.
I heard about org charts, Amy.
Well, forget org charts. I've got another question. The word that stuck out to me is mentors, because it's something we talk a lot about on here. It's something we were talking about on Twitter in the last few weeks. How do you go about finding mentors? How did you in that time? Is it an active pursuit? You go, hey, you're my mentor, or you just kind of sit back and learn? What's your method?
You know, I think I'm a people person. I love people. And, you know, in the Austin office at the time, there weren't that many people in the office. I think there was maybe 150 people there. And so, you know, you kind of just get to know everybody. And, you know, there were people that I knew that were really smart. There was a guy by the name of Andre Matei who sat next to me, and this guy was crazy. We ended up hustling for some, you know, broke ass servers that we pulled and put underneath his desk. And I remember like throwing stuff at him to turn his server off when I was on a sales call, because I couldn't hear because the dang servers were so loud. But you know, that was like, literally, that was like, I think the bear release. I mean, we were trying to deploy OpenStack under his desk on these servers that were hot and loud. And you know, it was cool to kind of see it come to life and progress. But I don't think I ever said, hey, you're my mentor. You know, I think it was more of just a, hey, you're really smart. You know, let's go eat lunch and then teach me some stuff. You know, okay, maybe there was some bribery involved. I don't know. But yeah, I was lucky to find those folks along the way. And, you know, Andre ended up leaving Rackspace, and, you know, there were other people along the way that I met, you know, Jim Curry, who, you know, make no mistake, he was the brains behind, you know, spinning out OpenStack into a foundation. It was his idea to kind of want to level the playing field for OpenStack. I call him a brilliant maniac. I mean, he's so incredibly smart, and he's a little crazy, which is what I think you need. You know, if you're kind of in that role, you want to be thinking 5 years ahead. And he was that guy. And, you know, I give Jim a lot of credit. You know, he pushed me really hard. And I think he liked that I pushed him back a little bit too. And so, kind of being under Jim's wing and, listening to his banter and, you know, listening to his crazy ideas and giving him honest feedback, it was a valuable experience.
Well, the term that stuck out to me in this first segment was quota, the word quota. So, Nikki, now step out of your timeline for a minute and look at your whole career. You started in sales. You know, as we're telling our story, you're still, you know, working inside for Rackspace. But now you're doing more evangelism. You've been associated with the word evangelism more. How do you see the relationship between somebody who is out there with an evangelist title to the person that's actually carrying a quota?
Yeah, you know, it's honestly, it's the fun part of the sale, right? I mean, the thing I loved about sales was, you know, getting people excited about stuff. And I get to do that as an evangelist, but I don't have a quota and paperwork to do anymore. So it's kind of the best of all worlds. I mean, obviously, there's not the upside, but you know, I'll gladly take that. You know, frankly, I had a baby along the way at Rackspace, and realized that, you know, my husband at the time, he's still at Rackspace, but he was in sales also. So we had two people with a Rackspace sales quota in the house, and I was like, man, I'm losing my mind.
But as an evangelist, do you feel like it's important, or as an evangelist, how important is it for you, do you feel like it's for you to drive actual leads versus just being out there and getting people excited?
I think it's super important. At the end of the day, you know, my job doesn't exist if I'm not influencing the market in some way. And so that's my main goal and responsibility. Now, how you measure that is a whole nother story. It's almost impossible to measure the success of or the put any metrics around what an evangelist does. I've tried. I've had bosses that are like, we need to put some metrics around you. We need some KPIs. You know, I've posed this question on LinkedIn forums for developer evangelists. I'm like, how are you guys like measured? And, you know, there's really no clear cut answer. You can measure what your social media activity. Surely there's situations where you meet people and you're, you know, introduced to warm lead and you can pass that over to sales and say, hey, you know, like that came about because I had a relationship with somebody, but it's incredibly hard to measure what evangelists do.
if this was the Groucho show, a duck would now come down and we'd play a noise.
Yeah.
So, hey, Matt, you're the metrics word. Hey, Matt, you're a developer evangelist who believes in metrics.
No, I'm not. Damn it. Not a developer evangelist. I intentionally chose my title to be advocate. But sorry to interrupt, okay. John. No. But continue your thought.
I was just going to say, where are you on metrics these days?
That is
the whole developer advocate piece.
We did not plan this conversation, so Nikki, let's just go into this. Yeah, I'm obsessed with it. I think it's one of the most difficult questions you can ask, and in when you have the opportunity to connect marketing, sales, and community efforts, whether that's coming from engineering or from marketing, in a cohesive way, you can start seeing the dots connect. It's more, you're reading tea leaves. Like, you're not going to see me cause a direct sale with work in advocacy, but you will see that we have a larger audience that has been captured and engaged on different platforms. You will see that if somebody is connected to me from one to two hops away, they're more likely to go further into our sales funnel. Like these are the real objects that I'm looking to capture and identify. I think another important thing metrics wise, at least from my angle coming from a marketing side, is providing a baseline. Like, what are we doing that's working and how do we keep pushing that to do better? And that's a really interesting angle to it, as opposed to focusing just purely on the sales side. But ultimately, sales is a huge part of any meaningful advocacy or evangelist effort. And I think, I don't think that's talked about publicly enough. It's important to remember that you have to connect to those people that carry quotas.
Absolutely. I kind of preface my evangelist role when I talk to people inside my org. I let them know, like, hey, you know, I get it. You know, I'm a sales girl at heart. I just don't happen to have a quota. But don't tell anybody because it ruins my evangelist cred.
Nice. I love that we're showing the sausage making. Just like, don't tell anyone I'm actually in marketing because I'm contributing code to our repositories and I'm going and talking to nerds. Like, that's what I care about too. And it's the fun part of it. Yeah. But it does have real business effect if you pay attention.
Absolutely. I mean, I think more business happens via social influence now more than ever before, which is why I think why the Geek Whisperer is so great. You know, there's a lot of great ways to get information that simply didn't exist a few years ago.
I think it's an interesting question as we talk about measurement. And I think the place that we have seen the most support for all these kinds of roles, and again, they go by many different titles and many different sort of flavors, is it is in some ways cheaper. The person in the role on the marketing side usually doesn't carry a quota, and we are maybe cheaper and can help people who do carry a quota scale. So it's kind of an interesting model. If the idea of cheaper in that one person can help 10 people on a sales team scale, you know, as opposed to having to hire 10 more salespeople. So I think that might be, as we move forward, an interesting way to look at it and measure. And like you said, I think the folks who've been successful in these roles reach across the aisle and talk to engineering, talk to sales, kind of map those different organizations back to each other, which you can buy a lot of forgiveness and you can get a lot of time on that as opposed to just doing straight traditional measure.
Yeah.
Amy, are you explaining how Cisco works? And that's a legitimate question, because I'm still trying to figure it out.
Is this the right forum? Because we can do that.
I'm naming no names. This is just in my experience, and having seen this a few times now and talking to people who have those roles, I think if you disconnect from sales, I think that's true. Don't you guys think in general, if you disconnect from sales and engineering, you're already putting yourself in a really vulnerable spot. So I think just as a thinking how business works for all the whisperers out there listening to us, you can have a flaky job title, but boy, howdy, be connected to the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally. I mean, if I wasn't on sales calls, I would have no clue what's going on. It's through those conversations with customers that you get a sense of where the market's at on a day-to-day basis.
No, and that actually, sorry, if I can jump in there, leads me to another question of, is that one of your tips and tricks? How do you stay ahead of, how do you stay technically sharp, and how do you stay in touch with trends in that broader sense as well?
Yeah, I might even just frame that a little more, saying that we've just admitted that you're kind of a saleswoman at heart, Nikki, which is weird for me to realize, because I'm like, you're the evangelist I want to be like when I grow up. And yet, despite all this, you're saying that one of your tricks is actually being more engaged in sales. So how does it seem that you're ahead of the curve when it comes to the technology these days?
I don't know. You know, I'm a voracious consumer of Twitter, and I've got, you know, tweet deck set up with all kinds of search terms, and I will check in on that all day, every day. And you start seeing things that, you know, start getting retweeted a lot. You're like, huh, maybe I should pay attention to this. I also, you know, love listening to podcasts and trying to learn as much as I can. Anything you want to learn literally is on YouTube, you know. So it's like, if you want to learn about something, you can just go to YouTube and, you know, watch a video. Of course, some will be better than others, but I think all the information typically is out there. You just got to go search for it. And as far as, like, you know, where you start to see marketing versus truth versus where customers are really at, the only way you're going to do that is by talking to customers and prospects. And I do that at conferences. I do that on road shows. I do that on sales calls, you know, kind of wherever the business, I mean, at Cisco, obviously, you know, we're the newly acquired company. And so, you know, there's more demand than there is supply for information. So folks keep me pretty busy there. We had a really small team at MetaCloud, and now we're, you know, part of this massive organization with tens of thousands of salespeople around the globe. So, you know, there's people literally reaching out on a daily basis saying, hey, can you help me understand this? Hey, can you talk to my customer? Hey, and, you know, if I have the time, I'll never say no.
So let's take a step back and anchor this more into your actual life right now. You have gone from Rackspace. You went to a few companies in between. I think the real knock it out of the park one was MetaCloud, that was recently acquired by Cisco. So littler company focused on OpenStack, consumed by a much larger company. And yeah, that must have been quite a big change of pace for you.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was at MetaCloud for a whopping 3 months. And I think my first, you know, Sean and Steve, our co-founders at MetaCloud, Sean Lynch and Steve Curry, were super awesome. They're like, hey, you know, Scott Sanchez, Nikki, can we talk to you guys real quick? We're like, yeah, sure. They're like, we know you just joined, but there's all this interest. And we're like, cool, that's awesome. And so we did what we could in the 3 months that we were there. And then, of course, the rest is history. Now we're part of Cisco.
Hey, I'm going to go back to a former topic that we just covered a second ago, is about connecting with sales. Confession time here at VMware, I was not very connected with sales, but I had kind of a special position and I was doing my thing and making noise in my area. I was ending up talking to a lot of customers through the VXpert program, but I didn't actually go on sales calls. We didn't do much sales training. And when we did, it was pretty 101. And so, Nikki, how do you actually connect with sales? Or Amy, you did more of this too. How do you actually go on road shows or talk to salespeople? Every time I talked to salespeople, they really wanted like a social media one-on-one, which I really wasn't very interested in giving. So what are some of your tips, or what have been some good experiences about integrating with the sales force?
you know, I'm always selling, you know. If I'm at a conference, I'm going to be in the booth, you know. I want to be where the action is. That's
a good
people
point.
Person. One thing that I would say you, John and Matt and Amy, you know, one thing I think we all have in common is that all of us are people, you know. I think being an evangelist wasn't a symptom so much of as, you know, what I knew, so much as it was just the kind of inherent person and my personality traits, you know. It just seemed like a natural fit of something to do for someone who loves people as much as I do.
Nikki, do you think evangelists are born or made?
Man, I think that evangelists absolutely share traits that are probably more, you know, nature, nurture, you know, early on type of personality trait things. But I also think that you have to have a passion for a particular thing to be a successful evangelist.
Passion, the P word. Do you get mad at marketers who aren't passionate?
I can attest to that. I didn't get the blunt of that, but yes.
Look, I think if you're a word of mouth marketer and you're telling stories that don't resonate, or if you don't have a story at all, if whatever you're pitching or selling doesn't have an emotional resonance component to it, then you're doing it wrong. I mean, I think anytime I'm doing a presentation, I'm trying to get at an emotion. I'm trying to convey an emotion and make people feel an emotion, whether that's, you know, being scared of something or being excited by something or being inspired by something. That's what I'm trying to do as an evangelist.
But and I'm going to jump in innovation, there. But innovation, that's the story.
But, yeah. Right. Buzzword bingo.
Our biggest announcement yet.
Well, but and tying this all back to the sort of our evangelist born or made, I think it is a very interesting, there is an interesting relationship with selling, that it's interesting to talk about that passion piece, to talk about the emotional resonance, because I think really great salespeople, that's what they do. I think great marketers, that seems to be what they do as well. And tying it all back together into that social piece, and how do you get more connected with customers? How do you engage with sales? Ironically, I think the very tools that we talk about with social media democratize and give us access to customers, to our sales force, to other people through the organization that you may not have access to in your daily life. So that's my sort of tip, that it is sometimes worth doing the 101 or the executive coaching, because you get to people who are outside your own organization. And I found that salespeople see the value of what we do really quickly. It feels like field marketing, maybe. It feels very hands-on. People feel like you're in their camp. And Nikki, with your sales background, that's immediate resonance, right?
I think it's more authentic than any marketing, traditional marketing you could ever do. You know, it's human. It's real. It's not, you know, I'm not going out and, you know, using all the, you know, big, you know, convincing, game changing, innovating, blah, blah, blah. Like I'm going to be real about stuff, and there's, you know, there's always going to be good and there's always going to be bad. But I think, you know, part of being a successful evangelist means that you have to be authentic and you have to be real, and you can't overpromise and underdeliver.
Yeah,
because it's your personal brand on the line, right?
There seems to be a requirement for some serious knowledge on the subject as well. So it seems that technology, the expertise, along with the passion, do those two things have to be coupled, or can you survive on just passion, Nikki?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you don't know what you're talking about, no one's going to listen to you. You know, you got to be credible, you got to be authentic, and you got to know your stuff. And, you know, the only way you're going to know your stuff, you know, no one's going to come and, you know, teach me, you know, everything I need to know. It's a lot of times, you know, it's frustrating to see people who are like, oh, well, you know, how'd you find all this stuff out? You know, there's no class I can go to. It's like, man, you gotta go find it. There has to be something inside of you that makes you want to go out and seek information. And, you know, I think that's part of how I've been successful is, you know, I've just got a huge appetite for knowledge. And I'm a bit of a skeptic, I think, at points too. I was writing an internal memo about the OpenStack Murano project today, and it was really cool to kind of go and, you know, read all the info floating out there on the wikis and watch a couple videos and balance out some pros and cons. And same with Cloud Foundry, you know, I'm really trying to dig deep into Cloud Foundry. We've got a couple customers that are asking for it, so, you know, it's been good. It's like, okay, a customer's talking about this. You know, I'm not super deep on that. Let me go find out what it's about. And, you know, anytime I write something down, it's going to help me kind of cement it into my brain. So those are good opportunities, those opportunities where you, you know, can go out and find that information for a purpose. And then, you know, naturally that stuff just builds over time.
Mm-hmm. I love the skeptical piece, right? You didn't just take the talking points, the bullet points from the marketing brief. You're digging in yourself. That's awesome.
Yeah, totally. I'm like, okay, well, what if you don't have Solometer? What if you don't want to run Solometer? What if, you know, it's like little questions like that. You know, there's a critical way to look at things. And I'm always a little bit skeptical of any kind of marketing stuff. Look, I've sat on the marketing side for a while now. I think as an evangelist, they don't really know where to stick you, but being on the marketing side now for a long time and, you know, seeing copywriters and people who quote unquote polish stuff, by the time the output comes out, it's completely different. And so I'm like, all right, you know, I'm going to read this thing. I know it's the marketing stuff. Let me call somebody or find somebody who knows what the real truth is behind all this stuff.
And may I jump in and say, yeah, that is why I am so against the prescribed tweet. You just described it in like the macro, which is when you get content and you question it or engage with it, you put your personal brand, you put your personal stamp, and something more critical, more interesting, more evocative happens. So I will now step off my soapbox.
No, you know what? Nothing annoys me more than marketing going, hey, can you amplify this with a link to a blog or something? I'm like, dude, no. Like, no, no, no. I just ignore those. I'm like, you know what? If it's good, oh, sure. You know, I'll tweet it or I might add a comment or something. But I would say probably 19 times out of 20, I'm not going to put out tweets.
You're not a megaphone.
Just because somebody asked me to. I'm not anyone's megaphone.
No, but if somebody comes to you with something relevant to you and it has the technical chops and the right angle on it, yeah, of course you'll distribute it and help syndicate it. Like that is the basic formula for influencer marketing. But first,
totally.
First you have to have something meaningful that you're delivering. You can't just, you know, work on the relationships alone.
And as far as Twitter's concerned, you got to be a human too. Nobody wants to hear a freaking, you know, marketing account. Like, no one wants to engage with just a megaphone for, you know, PR announcements. It's just annoying.
Amen.
Amen.
John, I feel like you have more thoughts on this topic.
On amplification?
Yeah, yeah. And just the weird negotiations between people that don't quite plug into an org chart and then, you know, these sort of influencers that play in the ecosystem as well. And then just these expectations of others, like the balance of those, you know, I feel like you're a master of that. You're the coral reef guard.
Well, it's interesting. We're coming at this in so many different directions. I've been hanging out with some people lately that think of themselves as community managers, and they have a particular take on it. Amy's hat reads influencer marketing. Nikki is an evangelist. You are an advocate. They're all slightly different takes on this. So, I mean, I guess, Nikki, do you think of yourself as an influencer marketer? Do you seek out other influencers, or are you kind of a grassroots developer hackathon sort of person?
Probably definitely the former. I'm more of a product and a technology evangelist than I am a developer evangelist.
Okay. I mean, do you use any, and the answer could be no here, and my bet's on no, but we'll see. Do you use any piece of software or influencer marketing CRM sort of dealy to actually manage your day job, or is it all kind of in your head and in your email box?
So I have used a couple of things in the past. One tool that I'm particularly fond of is HubSpot's great. I think they were also an OpenStack user at one point, might still be an OpenStack user, but was introduced to HubSpot when they gave a demo at an OpenStack event, and they really kind of help tie together all of the impressions and emails through Salesforce, and so they kind of allow you to allow people to self-identify as, you know, someone who's looking, someone who's, you know, just kicking the tires, someone who has never heard of the technology, is new to it. And you're able to kind of paint a picture of, you know, who these people are in the market that may be interested in your stuff.
I did not expect that answer at all.
Yeah, HubSpot's super cool. And I love it. I mean, it's a good way to put out content and actually see who's engaging with that content. And if they're, you know, you start to see that there's people who are engaging with your content a lot more frequently than most. And those are the people that you can target with more specific content. So that's more on the marketing side, I would say, but it definitely has a social component to it, which is incredibly valuable. And, you know, I don't actually, you know, work on the HubSpot platform for our group, but I do use it to get a feel for how certain pieces of content are doing out on the web.
Wow. I didn't expect that at all either. Very cool. I was a big user of HubSpot in the past, and I actually, I think it's one of those things that it's only as good as the users, where like you can really aggregate a lot of different data feeds into a single sort of idea of a campaign and see that you have an impact with the story or you don't. And then you can A/B test parts of it. So It's great. It's a good call out.
Yeah, Matt, but think about this. Think about what Nikki told us. She likes going to customer meetings. She likes going on road shows. What is the HubSpot analytics, but kind of a peek over the shoulder of a bunch of customers and seeing what they actually read versus what they ignored?
Yeah, exactly. Instead of just, you know, spraying and praying with content, you're saying, hey, like there are click through rates and there are follow ups to these things and different ways in which to see how effective they are. And if somebody makes it pretty and easy to see it all in one interface, why the hell not use it?
Totally. I mean, we used HubSpot data to retool the MetaCloud website. You know, we knew which pages people were on. We knew how long they were on them. We knew kind of what the hot areas of the website were, and we were able to bring those a little bit closer to the forefront and push back some other stuff that maybe wasn't getting as many click-throughs, or rewrite it, or, you know, put new content out. And so it was really incredibly valuable to us as a small company that had limited marketing resources to be able to see how good your influence actually was, what pieces of content people actually cared about.
So, Nikki, one of the questions that we continually wrestle with is career path. We've determined that even social media in a big corporation like Cisco, you know, there may not be that many social media specialists anymore because that function devolves out to the product groups in the field. Evangelist is also tricky. You're evangelizing something new. How long can you stay with that new thing? I don't know. Where do you see your career going next?
That's a good question. You know, I think about what I'm passionate about, and there's some cool things happening in tech that are just blowing my mind. One of those things that has piqued my interest as of late is home automation. I am absolutely floored by all the things you can automate in your house. And I think it's cool. I think it's fun. I think it makes my life better, easier, smarter, safer, whatever. I would love to go down that path at some point and, you know, figure out how, you know, apps that are being written on the cloud are changing how people live in their home lives on a day-to-day basis. I started out with a Nest thermostat, like most people, and ended up buying a Philips Hue lighting system for my house, mostly because I'm a little secret. I used to go to a lot of raves and I was like, what? I can get this thing. And each bulb has 16 million colors and I can program them. That sounds so cool. And there's an app that makes them sync to music. What? And so I bought it, not realizing that they had all these like kind of out of the box integrations with if this, then that, and all these other kind of cool tools. And I was like, holy smokes, man. Like I can program my lights. I can geofence my lighting. I can. And, you know, if I'm traveling out on business and I'm gone, I can make it look like somebody's home by setting lights off in different rooms during different hours. Like, that's cool. Like, I thought that was really awesome. So I don't know. Maybe there's a path somewhere down the line on, you know, on evangelizing for, you know, some home automation company or business.
You realize, of course, that answer was a complete geek answer, right? I expected you to say, well, I'll be the director of blibbity blah, and then I'll, you know, interact and cross connect and cross matrix with the European blibbity blah, and then, you know, then I'll go move over into partner blibbity blah. Instead, you're like, nah, man, I think the Internet of Things is really cool. I want to do something there.
Yeah, totally. I think it's cool. You know, and that's the thing is, like, you got to have passion for whatever you're evangelizing for. It's not going to be authentic, you know, but you can only fake it for so long before people are like, realize you're full of crap. So, you know, I think about things that I'm excited about. That's something that I'm actually really excited about. I'm excited about Tesla. Tesla's doing some crazy stuff, just super, super, super amazing things. Our co-founder bought a Tesla. I was like, oh my God, give me a ride. And so he gave me a ride, and he did the whole like 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. And you know, I don't know if you guys have seen, there's a video out there, people's faces, they're being recorded as you go from 0 to 60 in 4 seconds, and people freak out. I totally freaked out. Like, my head was slammed against the headrest, and, you know, a string of expletives came out of my mouth, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is the most, and it was so quiet. It was just so unexpected. So I think about things like that, that are just like so freaking cool that, you know, I can imagine my kid, you know, telling me one day, like, I can't believe you guys actually drove cars. That's crazy. You know, just so, you know, when we were kids, you know, we had landlines, we didn't have cell phones. Like, you know,
that segues nicely into my favorite question, starting with how we all survived the 70s, but
not all of us, Amy.
Except for Brinder, who didn't. how, if you could tell somebody, here's one thing, learn from me, I swear, don't ever do this again, what would you tell them in terms of career path? What is the one thing that if you had a do-over, you'd absolutely say, no, wearing a helmet on a bike is a good idea. Don't ever do that again.
Look, I'm a big fan of telling people to follow your passion. I have so many friends that come to me and are like, oh, I hate my job. I hate it. It's killing me. It's horrible, blah, 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 blah. Look, you can change it. I think at some point you just got to realize you got to do what you love. And so don't stay in a job that you hate. Don't stay in a relationship that you hate. Don't stay working for a boss that you don't, that you can't learn from, you know. Don't be complacent. Like, go do what you love. If you go do what you love, everything else will fall into place. Yeah. And it may not happen overnight. You know, it might be a path. You know, you may not be able to just snap your fingers and say, screw it and quit your job and go climb Everest, you know, but if you're not doing what you love, I look at it this way. Somebody wise once told me, you know, that time is more valuable than money. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. But you know, I've started to think about it. I'm like, you know what? That's so true, because you can make more money, but you can't make more time. And so you have to spend your time judiciously doing what you love. I'm not going to be one of those people that looks back at my life and goes, oh, I spent my whole life working and now I'm, you know, too old and broken to go do the things I actually wanted to do in my life. I'm not going to be one of those people. You know, you gotta make it count.
Yeah. And what I love about your story so much, Nikki, is that you focused on what you care about, what you're passionate about, and you've been willing to compromise on some of the other details. For instance, I think your conversation about connecting into sales or connecting into marketing and being willing to move between those while also high-fiving people in engineering, like, I think your flexibility in the org chart to interact with the business as they need while also focusing on how it affects your career is brilliant. And I think it's something that people often forget they can do.
Totally. And it spills down to your home life. You know, Amy, I'm sure you can relate to this one. I mean, Amy travels a lot. I travel a lot. You know, I have a 4.5-year-old son. It's hard. I spent 100 days on the road last year. You know, that's one third of my son's life that I was gone. And, you know, lucky for me, his dad is great and lets me FaceTime with him every night and say goodnight to him and all that good stuff. But it's hard. You know, you gotta figure out, you know, how to keep things in balance. And, you know, I don't ever think I'm at a period where I achieve balance for a long period of time. But I think that, you know, if I look back over the course of a year, you know, I think overall I would say that there's absolutely balance in my life.
And just to also wrap up on what you're saying, it's follow your passion and the job will follow.
Totally.
And to sort of, to be smart about it. I mean, that's what, I mean, you've driven your own career. You've figured out what you like and you went after it. And there are ways to prove that. Cause I find, and I know I've seen you do this. You can prove things. Metrics will follow passion at some level as well. You can find a way to tell the story if what you're doing is good for the business.
Totally. I told Jim Curry, I was like, I think I'm supposed to be like an evangelist. And he's like, do the effing work. He's like, you want to be an evangelist? He's like, do the effing work. Go do it. Just go do it. And then, you know, after that, they let me like write my job description officially because it was that time of year where they had to, you know, slot me in somewhere. But yeah, I was lucky enough to write my own job description a couple times at Rackspace, which is not a luxury I think many other companies would have afforded me. Yeah. But
Nikki,
good stuff.
I got to ask one more question, though. And this one's near and dear to my heart. Has there been a time in your career, or do you feel it occasionally, where you feel either obligated or bullied into feeling like you need to specialize? You know, you need to say, I am this, this is what I do, here's how you can use me in your business.
Oh, man, that's a good question. You know, to some extent, I feel like I do have to specialize in OpenStack. Like I have to know what's going on in OpenStack. And look, that's a train that is come and it's going now, but it's not, you know, it's not going to be, you know, a place where I think long term there's going to be evangelists necessary. I do think that that I've had opportunities to learn about the business that I've absolutely seized. I wasn't forced into it though, but it's been a huge, huge help for my career overall. Like I think, you know, being involved in, you know, C-level conversations has definitely made me feel like I've kind of got an MBA under my belt without getting an MBA. And had I not been an evangelist, had I not been in those conversations, I don't think I would have any kind of level of understanding of what happens in those types of engagements had I done otherwise. Did I feel bullied into it? No, I don't think so. Do I feel like I need to specialize in anything other than OpenStack right now? Maybe, you know, I think, as far as, you know, containers go and, you know, some of the newer technologies that are coming out, looking at PaaS and Kubernetes, like, you know, I think that's the next logical step. And I think I definitely have some reading up to do, some Googling and some YouTubing to do on those topics.
There you go. Proving your value again, not waiting for the class, but just going and teaching yourself the next thing. Well, wow. So Geek Whisperers, other than feeling incredibly inspired, is there other feelings or thoughts you want to share before we wrap this up?
I just put in a quick one for doing the work, right? We talked about passion, but listen to what Nikki just said. She humping it on the road and, you know, voracious info vor about OpenStack and knowing her stuff, right? It's not like you can just be passionate and like sit at home and eat Cheetos and write Game of Thrones fan fiction, right? you got to actually do the work. So
do the tasks of the job that you want. Yes.
Wow.
No, I love it.
Amy?
Yep. High five on that one. High five on that one. I think that, I think sometimes, and not that this is digging ditches or, you know, roofing houses, which I mark as two hard labor items. Technology is the benefit of paying fairly well and getting to work with incredibly smart people. But, it is not all bacon and unicorns. It is, I just love what you said there, Nikki. It's, you know, go just, what John said, go do the work, go find it, and don't say you can't. Find ways to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, so Nikki, thank you so much. I think this is going to be a truly inspirational episode for people to realize that they have a lot more power over their own career, you know, with some good luck and a hell of a lot of hard work. If people want to follow up more on your story or want to connect with you, where are a couple of the best places to do so?
If you want to see the details of my story, there was a HuffPost article, the Women in Business series. You can find that under my name. Laura Dunn, great author, is doing that series, and there's a little bit more of my story there. Otherwise, you can find me on Twitter at Nikki Acosta, NikiAcosta.
This was another fantastic episode of the Geek Whisperers. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Awesome.
That was great. Listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
And thanks for having me on, guys. Super honored to be on the Geek Whisperers. You guys have a killer program.
Oh, thank you. I definitely, my heart just skipped a beat.
You guys and gal, I should be more specific and not use, you know, gender-specific terms there. Trying to be inclusive, son and lady, son and daughter.
Keep working on it.
Yeah.
Dang it, fail.